Blog Talk Radio.
Fill My Eyes and Company with Poetry. I hope everyone's having a great night. I hope you had a good weekend. I hope you have a better weekend to follow. And so it's going to be an unusual beginning for this because I'm all by my lonesome. So God help us all. So I don't know. We have a nice board of poetry. I should be done in about 15 minutes by myself. So just thought I'd let you all know. Let me see now. What else is new? I'm not sure everybody else's weather is, but we're starting to feel awful like fall. Yeah, I understand it is the end of September, but I definitely am feeling weather that strikes me as the end of October. But it's not too bad. It's just odd, you know, to me. I keep thinking it's later in the year than it really is. And then when it gets to be later in the year, I'll be saying, wow, when did that happen? You know, nothing unusual for me there. So let me think. Is there anything new and exciting? No, I think that everything is kind of the same. Just in case anyone is curious, Faziana and Part Sinner and Part Saint will be on tonight at 12:30 after this show. Last week she was sick. And prior to that, we had a schedule shift, but I believe she is back to being Friday night or Saturday mornings. you know, after this show. So anyone that can visit, call in, I'm sure she'd be glad to hear from you. And I just want to throw that out there because that's a little different. And I believe tomorrow night is, after midnight, is Once Upon a Time with Dexter Bailey and Pam Ray. So there are schedule changes that have been going on. So now everybody knows, and I actually remembered to say something. That in itself is amazing. So I think I'm going to start out the night with one of our audios. And the first one I have here is by Naomi Sarah, and this is called The Baseball Cap.
The baseball cap. You hand me a faded old baseball cap, saying, "Here, this is for you." And I smile, knowing it is your favorite, knowing all the precious memories it carries, all those memories of an us, of our nights sitting side by side on the old rickety porch at the cottage overlooking the lake, with no need to talk, content to simply be there silently together. And I remember you had bought it for our first date and wore it the day we met, but barely, because I couldn't see anything beyond your eyes. Your eyes that lit up every time you smiled as you drank in every word I said. And for the first time in many years, I felt heard. As you kept asking me, seemed like a thousand questions. And I think I loved you for it. Yes, I loved you. Loved you from that first day. And tonight, I won't have to flip that awful cap off your head as you carry me to bed, because I'm the one wearing it. And seeing me standing there in baseball cap and nothing more, you laugh and smile wickedly, removing it to savagely tangle your fingers in my hair.
Oh, Naomi, that's excellent. I love that poem. I love your, what I like about the way you write is the fact that it's real. You know, it comes off as relatable and real. The words are soft. And there's always a lot of feeling and emotion in it. And that's what I like about your writing. This piece is just full of something wonderful. You know, you hand me a faded baseball cap saying, "Here, this is for you." And I smile, knowing this is your favorite. You know, so the lead into this is perfect, because you're already saying, you know, it's my favorite. And then you go on to explain why. And I think that is just wonderful. You know, and I remember you had bought it for our first date and wore it the day we met, but barely, you know, because I couldn't see anything beyond your eyes. I think that's just wonderful. And then how you tied it up in the end, and seeing me standing there in baseball cap and nothing more, you laugh and smile wickedly, removing it to savagely tangle your fingers in my hair. That baseball has been through a lot. And I think you did a fabulous job putting it out there for everyone to share, to appreciate. And that's a good word for it. Now I'm going to take a minute and say, hey, welcome to the party, Laurent. There was a one-man show there for a little while.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Gene.
Yes,
sorry,
yes.
I got a little delayed before I could come on.
That's all right. It's all right. Did you happen to hear Naomi's poem?
I heard that beautiful soft read that she gave it and was mightily impressed. And then again, impressed by your statement. Your comment, Jane, you pretty much said everything that I wanted to say about this wonderful poem, which takes a prosaic object, a baseball cap, a faded old baseball cap, and spins this endearing story from it, moving from the cap to the memory, of how it was acquired, what it meant at the time, and the fact that, and I think I loved you for it. Yes, I loved you from that first day. And tonight I won't have to put that awful cap off your head as you carry me to bed because I'm the one wearing it. And when you use the words, savagely tangle your fingers in my hair, the implication for the word savage is all that you need to do. And did so skillfully, you didn't have to say and ravish me and went on for hours, boom, boom. All of that is implied in that savage. I second everything that Gene said, and then the little bit that I added, great piece.
Yeah, it was great. I really liked that one a lot. Naomi has a way of doing that. She'll take something that's simple about something in a given day or a moment, and she just embellishes it so wonderfully and makes it into something just fabulous. So, yeah, that was a great piece. Kind of glad I started.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nice job, Naomi.
Absolutely. Let me see now. Well, let's see. At the top of the list here, I have some of the mythos pieces that are carried over from my last Tuesday show. So I think we're going to go back up there. And I'm going to have you read this first piece, Laurent, by Bookworm Dave, called Tempting Medusa. Totally different from the first piece for the night.
I don't want to be the one who tempts Medusa, but I'll read all about it.
There you go.
All right, Tempting Medusa. It was not that her serpentine hair repulsed you. She was a beauty before pride, and she was cursed by the goddess she scorned, telling other of her adornments. She stood before Athena, cursing towards her, heckling the goddess, mocking her. Athena, clearing her day, punishment would be fast and deliberate. Remove the one beauty mark on this wayward mortal. As her hair grew, so did the serpents, replacing her flaxen hair with snakes, hissing and spewing venom. Her once sparkling eyes now grew hot and burning, turning suitors to stone. Her statue bodies, reminders of her desired suitors, now fallen statues of death so many years ago. And
nice read, Laurent. Yeah, this is another wonderful piece on the mythos from Tuesday. She was a beauty before pride, and she was cursed by the goddess she scorned, telling other of her adornments. She stood before Athena, cursing toward her, heckling the goddess and mocking her. Didn't get her very far, though, did it? No. As her hair grew, so did the serpents, replacing her flaxen hair with snakes, hissing and spewing venom. Her once sparkling eyes now grew hot and burning, turning suitors to stone. Yeah. I think Dave really captured Medusa in this. It was short, story-wise, it was short, but it was solid. He could have gone on, embellished it with a whole lot of, whole lot more added to statements, but it wasn't really necessary. I think that this just kind of covered it, and covered it well. He told the story of Medusa in not so many words, and great job. Thank you, Dave, for sharing with us, and thanks for entering the contest. Well done. And Laurent, what did you think?
I liked it for a number of reasons. There are some characters in mythology and in mm-hmm. fiction that stand the test of time, that invite retellings, because the stories are, the original stories are so imaginative, so open to to embellishment. So mm-hmm. this is a short retelling of the story that I think captures the original legend and retells it in a somewhat more modern English. It's concise, but it's precise. and it doesn't put a foot wrong. It simply tells you about the legend in her own words, from her own point of view, and a perspective that I enjoyed.
Right, right. Nice one. Nice one. Okay. Let's see now. Where do I go from
here? I take it we don't have Naomi with us anymore.
What do you mean? Nobody was with us. It was just you and I from the beginning.
Oh, that was a SoundCloud. I'm sorry. I thought she was online with us.
Nope. Just you and me. Just you and me.
Just you and me, huh? Where are we going with that one?
We're going on to the next poem. Now, don't you be such a silly boy. Some things are not meant for radio.
Silly boy, silly boy. I am just your silly boy.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, now this next piece I'm going to put up, I'm going to read. And this is called Miscarriage of Justice by Jack Tomkovic. And let me see if I can make this large enough. I can read all the words right. Miscarriage of Justice by Jack Tomkovic. The nine opine that women cannot have title to their own bodies. So when a pregnancy is watered with rivers of bile and sweat, no longer viable, what a crippling, face-breaking harvest, like eating the chaff and burning the wheat. How acrid the brew. These festivals of dying flesh, these gladiators in Colosseum spectacles, rolling the dice. Is she sick yet? Sepsis? Full body infection? Then we can remove this lifeless tissue, poisoning her, the child she so wanted. End poem. I read the AN on this. My daughter was so wanted, desired, needed, and so are almost all the miscarriages. These women wanted these children, but life is cruel, and the Supreme Court crueler still. Okay. Well, Laurent, what do you say about this one?
It's on a subject that could easily arouse my ire to a degree that is unsuitable for the radio. The Supreme Court, when I was growing up, not to wander away from this poem, but the Supreme Court, when I was growing up, had a position that was almost sainted. These were wise men who deliberated justly, rendered opinions that people could live with, that facilitated a peaceful society. And what they have done by repealing Roe v. Wade, by passing a law, or at least passing judgment, that corporations are individuals, and open up the floodgates of money, creating an political situation where you have one party that is completely tied to big oil and energy and does their bidding, and the other one who at least is trying to level the playing field. Of course, that's my own personal opinion. Shouldn't reflect anyone else's. And I think that Jack takes what I just described and puts it in his own words. The nine opine that women cannot have title to their own bodies. That is it. That is the sum and substance. And not have title to their own bodies. Slaves again. Held in shackles. Shackles of law. with no justice whatsoever. It is a piece that says what it has to say in metaphor, because it is a cruel subject to have to even discuss, and it's something that was best not controlled except by women who have to bear the burden and the brunt of being pregnant or being badly pregnant or being pregnant against their wishes. It is a terrible situation, and that I don't see getting any better. Unless the current administration does something about it. Meanwhile, Jack has given words to the frustration many of us feel. Great piece, Jack.
Yeah, I think this is a well-done piece. He made this right somewhat palatable in the fact that it doesn't kick you off right from the beginning. it irritates you, but he puts it in such a way that you can get through it without, like, going off the deep end at first. You know, it doesn't make the subject matter any less aggravating.
Right.
I liked his play on the miscarriage of justice. That title is, you know, very appropriate for the piece itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, I guess I'm a little crazy, but I always feel like, you know, it's we're individuals and we all have that right to make a choice. And who is to take that from us? You know, no matter what the circumstances, you know, I feel that I'm the one who has to answer for myself in the end. So it's my choice. You know, as for someone making decisions for me, it's just nuts. Yeah, that's just not going to work. We all know I'm a little stubborn like that. But, yeah, it was just really well done by Jack. So, Jack, I have to say it was a great share and very well done. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, you know, really. Well said, well written. So thank you for sharing with us, as always. Yeah, something else. Yeah. I'm going to wander over here now. Mm-hmm. Ron, I'm going to put up this piece by Dan Dacino now. Absolutely. And, well, if I hit the right button, we'll be good. I don't want to go there. Okay. And writing a song in between, like, every fifth poem or something. There we go. Missing Puzzle Piece by Dan Dacino. Whenever you're ready.
Missing Puzzle Piece. I'm a puzzle piece that just doesn't fit. Been trying to figure it out, basically, since What Is My Forever? It's just becoming easier to be left in the box. The picture puzzles, the ones that you can tell what it is by looking at the pieces, even if you don't have the box. I never even try those. My shape is never right. The colors on my top side obscure. Of course, underneath, I'm just cardboard like all pieces. But even that seems a little more discolored than most. So I keep trying out the ones that are more abstract. I see hope sometimes in the puzzle solver's eyes. They always go for the corner pieces first. But still, I start off as the rest, glanced at, handled, to find a place for me. But eventually, the puzzle is done, and I'm alone. A puzzle piece that just doesn't fit. I made a mistake a long time ago of wanting to learn. Now the problem is, I know. I made a mistake a long time ago of wanting to achieve. Now I am discouraged and disappointed. And I made a mistake a long time ago of wanting to fit in as the puzzle piece that I am. Weird, unsolvable. Now my edges are worn and frayed and trying to fit where I don't belong. Trying to fit where I don't. I've seen so many other puzzle pieces redesign their top, save their shape. They are now all such a part of beautiful completed pictures. I've tried to paint my picture side. Eventually it wears off. My true colors, and it hurts too much to alter my shape. I'm a puzzle piece that just doesn't fit. Really, nothing else but acceptance and poem.
The great read, Laurent. I don't know, Dan. You know, I'm reading this with Laurent, and I'm saying to myself, you know, you don't make yourself fit in. You're just in the wrong puzzle box. You know, there's you step off the other puzzle, and there, it's waiting for you just to slip into place. That's the way I look at things. You know, I know people think I'm crazy too, so forgive me. But I think that this is, it's a melancholy thing, you know, like trying to fit in and it's just not working. And You know, I just don't, yeah, I see hope sometimes in the puzzle solver's eyes. They always go for the corner pieces first, but still I start off as the rest, glanced at, handled, to find a place for me. But eventually the puzzle is done, and I'm alone. I'm a puzzle piece that just doesn't fit. I made a mistake a long time ago wanting to learn. Now the problem is I know. I made a mistake a long time ago with wanting to achieve, and now I am discouraged and disappointed. You know, I mean, it is. It's a sad piece. Lots of disappointment. And it's a hard piece to really swallow, but I just, I mean, for the puzzle piece, not, you know, not to read. To read, it's a great read, and it says a lot. it's just, yeah, you know, and it's not really a bright side on the bottom. It's just there's really nothing else but acceptance. You just kind of accept who you are and you keep on going, you know, and yeah, there's truth in that. So, you know, Dan does such a great job expressing his rights that this, and this is no exception. I mean, this is a unique direction for him, I think. Usually he's got something a little more on a nature line or what have you that I've read. But yeah, this is really good. Something to think about. It's some fodder, you know, for some deep thought, you know, about how, you know, none of us, do any of us really fit in? We all make ourselves fit into something. Yeah, it's just the way life is. In my book, or my thoughts, I think a lot of times I think to myself, yeah, they just want everybody to be the same. Yeah, just fall in line. Be like everybody else. I've never fit that mold. So I'm that puzzle piece that never fit in either, Dan, so I can get it. But, you know, you just move over to a different puzzle box. I'm telling you, that's the way. But, yeah, great piece and really well written. And thanks for the share. And, Laurent, maybe you can clean up my comment a little bit. That would be good.
Well, there's not a whole lot to clean up there. You hit on what I immediately thought of. When he says it's just becoming easier to be left in the box, it's a different way of saying this, you know, tired of trying. So just leave me here, leave me alone. And I agree. You have to find either a different box or you have to make your own box, make your own world, which, you know, that can be done. Daniel really writes about one of the seminal questions of our time, of human existence, if you want to call it that, where do I fit in? And perhaps more importantly, where do I belong? Because if you belong in a place, you fit in. So you have to find out where you belong and not just try to fit into the existing framework that you find yourself in. Because somewhere there is a box, there is a framework just waiting for your shape, waiting for you. It is melancholy, but it's also philosophical. That leavens it a little bit. There's a certain amount of resignation in this. You know, he finishes it, there's really nothing else but acceptance. The acceptance that I will never find a place. And while that is his take on, for the sake of argument on the piece, I do believe, as you do, Gene, that you got to find a different box. The poem itself, nice. Death's kiss.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Here we go. Yes.
So, good job, Daniel. Way to go.
Absolutely. Let me see now.
Darkendoras is here to say hello. Hello, Darkendoras. How are you?
Hello, Darkendoras. Hello. Yes. It's a quiet night. Everybody must be celebrating the cool weather, you know.
Celebrating the Trump trial. Sorry, I won't go over there again.
We know you would love to. I'll tell you what, when we run out of poems, I'll let you have it. You can just do a monologue on that.
Ooh, read fast.
Wow. Okay, there was a request.
Don't need a monologue. I got a poem all ready to go.
Oh, God, that's what scares me. This one here had a request for Rex to read, but in light of Rex not being here, I'm going to give it a whirl because it was by Silvana Five. I might be able to do it.
Where is that boy?
I don't know. He must have had a hot date or something.
I don't know. You missed Friday. There's a black mark on your face.
Oh, my God. Okay. This is called Flower of Remembrance by Silvana Five. Bees, as far as the eye can see, bold and flamboyant, swaying in the gentle breeze, breathing the hypnotic fragrance, and in a dreamlike trance, running your fingers over petals of silk. Weave your footprints within the sea of scarlet. Feel the power of Mother Earth, which pulses with heartbeats of the fallen. Flower of aesthetic beauty, blanketing those who lie in eternal slumber. Brief is your life as was theirs. Scatter your seeds of hope and peace in the barren, scarred fields as a remembrance, lest we forget. End the poem. Nice piece, Silvana. Well, Laurent, don't stand on formality. Go ahead and jump in. It's just you and me.
No, it's the poem refers, I think, fairly obviously to World War One.
Yeah,
you can see the doughboy helmet and the bayonet, which is still being used in those days, predominantly. I feel the power of Mother Earth, which pulses with heartbeats of the fallen, flower of aesthetic beauty, blanketing those who lie in eternal slumber. To think of flowers as a blanket of beauty is really a beautiful vision for the mind's eye. And we can imagine that we feel the pulse, the heartbeats of the fallen, because life doesn't just disappear. It has lived, it has affected the universe in its own smallest of ways, obviously. But still, it was motion within the heavenly fields of our lives. Their life is brief. As a remembrance, lest we forget those scattering of the seeds of hope and peace, which will honor them and hopefully give them some peace in this one and ours. A beautiful piece, by Silvana.
Absolutely. I think it was a well-penned piece of remembrance and respect. I think it was just beautifully written. As far as the eye can see, bold and flamboyant, swaying in a gentle breeze. Breathe in the hypnotic fragrance and in a dreamlike trance, running your fingers over the petals of silk. Yeah. Poppy fields. You know, hypnotic fragrances and, you know, I don't know. Just, it's beautifully done. And it, you know, of course, to me, it takes me to Flanders Field, that poem.
Yeah.
You know, I think it probably would most everyone, but it does and it doesn't, because it's not written anything like it, but it definitely, you know, nods. And I think it was just beautiful. Just really, really well done, Silvana. And thank you so much for sharing with us. Sorry, Rex wasn't here to read it, but I wanted to make sure it didn't get carried over. Just beautifully written. And thank you so much for sharing. Wonderful piece. Don't make so much noise.
By the way, do you have a new microphone tonight?
No, I do not. Same one.
The fidelity of your voice, the volume, the pitch, the balance. The best I've ever heard. It sounds like you've got a whole new sound system. I've never heard you this clear and this strong before in terms of, because normally you break up a little bit or you're muffled, but this is really good.
Ah, see that? See that? No, everything's
so just
the same.
Remember whatever you're doing for the next show, okay?
That should be easy. I'm not doing anything. Maybe something you're doing. Maybe. Never.
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't know. You sound pretty spiffy tonight yourself, so I don't know. Different. Who knows? I tell you what, Laurent, I'm going to put this next piece up for you. This is called Of Life by Ben Hart. And whenever you're ready.
Wow, it's steamy. A little aspiration. Never helps.
Put your hand
I think
here.
Ben writes, what, a poem a day, two poems a day?
Something
boy,
like
he's prolific.
Hey,
and he's chosen this small subject of life.
When you finish this poem, Laurent, I want you to go ahead and break right into a comment because I have to be right back. Okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks.
Of life, life in a day. Waking as the sunlight shakes the rye, watch the dreams leave like smoke ascends, scar of the skies, silver lined. Distill the sting of menthol rainfall, and so another day breaks in the morning of the scattered resistance of starlight that hesitantly went to sleep in the deep blue dim. And with heavy heart, beloved will rise the dawn, and beloved, that lonely climber will fall down the mountain round, and the stars wake to return what day had made a desert back to a depth no man could ever weather, no woman could ever birth. And still, here we are, adrift in a place called Earth, life in a moment, to be found in the moment, between shelter and the storm. In the midst of wonder, like thunder, stitch the clouds back together in the moment before the storm lets go, and force of will just becomes power, blind and fair. Here's to life, because we weren't ever meant to be. We're all impossibilities in time, so cheers to life. Come, hold out for a while, and please, don't leave without me. End poem. A couple of things. Let me go to about the middle of this, where he says, we were never meant to be. If you take a look at the number, let's say we take a rock concert, right? Let's say there's 80,000 people there. The number of people who could have been there, instead of those particular 80,000 people, it beggars the imagination. It is hundreds of multiples of times more likely that you would not be part of that audience, that you had not been given birth to, will have to face death. And you that makes you a lucky one. Because if you die, that means you live. Think of all the souls that will never be born, that will never live. I mean, really, our ability to remanufacture ourselves, the hundreds of thousands of sperm that the average individual has in them, and of those hundreds of thousands, only one may be chosen to live, and the others remain the great unborn. So, yes, life in a day. You have to rise with the dawn, as you would, and go to sleep with the stars as they come out in this place called Earth. And, you know, life to be found in the moment between shelter and the storm, in the midst of wonder, like thunder stitches clouds back together in the moment before the storm lets go. There's a sound and a fury on the one hand, and there's a deep quiet and a peace on the other. And somehow we're always betwixt one and the other, going from the dark to the light, so to speak, a pendulum swinging back and forth. here's the life, because we weren't ever meant to be. We're all impossibilities in time. Again, the fact that we were the lucky ones to be born just staggers the imagination. So, cheers to life. Come hold out for a while. Please don't leave without me. Great ending. Great verse. Deeply, I think it's filled with faith. Perhaps not a religious faith, but a faith nonetheless in the spirit of man, in what we can achieve and how we should live life. As usual, Ben gives us a really, really good piece. So, a pleasure to read it. And I sincerely hope that she is back. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. It was a nice read and a great comment. I always have trouble picking apart, you know, because it's like, okay, do I want to go with the first part or the second part? Where do I want to hit on this? And of course I went and I said, well, I could go here. And then you read it. Well, I could go here. And then you read that. And I went, well, where do I want to go? But anyway.
Well, now wait a second. I'm going to leave you alone, and you got to talk to, and you got to somehow. And but so I sure used up the space. That's that right? I did.
I know, and I laughed because I was like, "Well, you know, here we go." So I'm going to go back to part two, life in a moment, to be found in the moment between shelter and the storm, in the midst of wonder, like thunder stitched the clouds back together in the moment before the storm lets go. And force of will just becomes power, blind and fair. You know, his wording in this is wonderful. You know, you think about that moment between the shelter and the storm, you know, and what a place to be, you know, stuck or at or whatever word you want to use there. In the midst of wonder, like thunder stitched the clouds back together. That's an interesting kind of thought there, you know. He's very, his visuals are always good. His imagery is always good. His thoughts always different. He definitely comes from a place of his own. He doesn't sound like every other poet that comes in or any other poet that comes in. He definitely has a voice that stands out as his own in all of his work. You know, there's just always something, and I like that about him. It's like here up in the beginning, it's waking as the sunlight shakes the rye to watch the dreams leave, like smoke ascends the scar and sky silver lined, the sky silver lined. You know, and then he goes on about menthol rainfall. He's a very unique writer in that respect. And I don't mean that in a generic kind of, you know, he's unique. He is, but he's very unique in his thoughts and the way he puts them out there for us. And I appreciate that because it is always something different. It's just hard for me to, like, kind of give a, you know, snap of the finger commentary on the piece. I mean, I like it. I like where, you know, how he did it. You know, he says this is love, pain, depression, hurt, rhyme, and sad. You know, that's not how I perceive all of this. And I guess, you know, maybe I'm not kind of catching in here, but cheers to life, because we weren't ever meant to be. We're all impossibilities in time. So cheers to life. Come hold out for a while, and please don't leave without me. It just doesn't strike me as being an extremely sad poem. But it's a well-done poem, and I like that. And as always, you know, I give kudos to Ben for his work. You know, I think he did a great job here. So thanks for sharing with us, Ben. For real. Okay. Now, if I had typed all this up and as I went along, I'd have been in much better shape. Let's see now. Oh, you read that one. That means I have to read something. Oh, gosh dang darn it.
Find something, you know, 4 or 6 lines. Well,
I know. That's what I was hoping for. because it's just smartest. Oh my gosh, no. I am going to do this piece. It's called I'm Ready Death by Darkened Auras. And see if I can get this where I'm at. I'm Ready Death by Darkened Auras. You tried to get me in my early teenage years. I wasn't ready and escaped the fray. Now my body is broken and tired. I just want to escape another day. They say death is something scary. It hurts and is something all should fear. But there's nothing that is more painful than the loneliness I feel standing here. Death has taken my family from me. And now with the murder of my mate, everything has been ripped from me. Why can't death become my fate? What is there to fear now? There's nothing left worth living for. Just a desecration of my heart and soul, an empty hole and nothing more. I'm here to seek you out now, Death. You wanted me long ago, I know. So won't you take my hand now, Death? I'm ready to follow where you go. End poem. Mm-hmm. Nice piece. It was inspired by a quote that says, sometimes death is not to be feared. So, well done. Okay, Laurent, tell us what you think about this.
Well, if you're in a place where death is an attractive alternative, you're not in a very good place. Who am I to say that you should not welcome death? But life, I think, should always deny death until the very, very end. And then I think there has to be an acceptance. But to seek it out involuntarily, to volunteer, promote yourself forward, is scary. To be in that place, to be so without hope, to be so bereft and bereaved, let grief rule you to the point where you welcome death is frightening. Now, that's from an emotional point of view. From a technical, more human point of view, this is a great piece. It has rhythm, it has flow, it has natural rhyme. It's well told. The message is strong. It fits the prompt. Hey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think Christina did a great job with this piece as well. It was well penned. It had great rhyme and meter. And, you know, it was a great take on that prompt. You know, sometimes death is not to be feared. And, you know, this poem, like, stepped up to death toe to toe. Like, come on, where are you? What are you doing now? You wanted me before. You ready? I'm ready. Come on. What are you hiding from? You know, that's kind of an idea in my head. And I think that it was nicely penned. And it was a great share for tonight. And
she seems more accepting of death than you do. I think you would be a great deal more pugnacious about the whole thing, like you just were. Come on, death, put him up.
Well, hers was a lot more, you know.
You don't take shit from death. You give shit to death. So I like
well,
that.
Death and I have met a few times, and not me personally. You know, after a while, it gets a little old.
Oh, well.
Yes, you know.
You don't want to leave scars on death.
No. But this really was. It was well done, well said. And I think it just kind of it hit the notes that she wanted it to. You know. So excellent job, Christina. And thanks for sharing with us, as always. Much appreciated. Okay, let me see now. Dun, 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 dun. That's going to bring me to you, but I don't know what I'm going to give you. Well, I kind of do, but I don't.
Give me the world, I have broad shoulders.
Okay, Atlas, here we go. Not really.
They're athletic, but they're broad.
Piece for you is called My Name is Billy Sometimes by Nuno Cardoso. So there you go. Whenever you're ready.
My name is Billy. As long as it's not Billy Clinton, I'm in good shape.
Sometimes.
My name is Billy. Sometimes. You know what? You could bang on my walls like fucker upstairs is, or you could even walk my dog, and the stop sign outside wouldn't move an inch. Cars would still continuously ignore it and crash. I'm not joking. Last year I saw it 5. Dump me into the tub. Go ahead. That would make 2 showers in a row this week. Personal record this past couple of months. Oh, Billy boy, or me, I've fallen off the wagon. I'm off my pills once more. The dogs bark after cars that pass by them. And oh, Billy boy, they write me poems. Isn't it wondrous what I can come up with? All in this tightrope, no balance. I'm the ball in the machine, watch me roll. Pinball, pinball. Insert another coin on the slot, oh, Billy boy. Let me tell you my new song. But not here, not now. You might nick it. That good. Rainbow, blood, paper cut. Okay, rope bunny, empires, drinking low, watering down, just to name a few. The beer inside the fridge clanks open once more, and now I see clearly there are layers. And
nice read, Laura. Well, let's see.
I ain't saying a word. It's all on you.
Don't worry, I'll be back to you. You will say a word.
I'll be absent.
You know, yeah, you'll be absent, all right. I kind of like how he started this one out. You know what? You could bang on my walls like the fuckers upstairs. Is or you could even walk my dog. And the stop sign outside won't move an inch. Cars would still continuously ignore it and crash. I'm not joking. Last year I saw it 5 times. Definitely hits on a few things, you know. People driving you a little crazy, you know. But shove me into the tub. Go ahead. That would make 2 showers in a row this week. Personal record this past couple of months. Oh, Billy boy, poor me. I've fallen off the wagon. I'm off my pills once more. The dogs bark after cars that pass by them. And oh, Billy boy, they write me poems. Yeah, you know, the second stanza, I think, kind of makes me think that there's a perspective of, you know, someone who is off their pills, you know, and they're dealing with the things going on around them and how it affects them. And, you know, I could be totally wrong. You know, I don't know no like that, and I'm not going to assume that there's any truth to this. But that's where that line leads me throughout this. You know, people are banging on the walls. Why are they banging on the walls? Are you up to no good? What? You know, it makes me wonder in that respect. And the old Billy boy thing all the way through, I think that's definitely, it kind of pulls you back in. Oh, Billy boy. Oh, Billy boy. You know, it kind of makes you look at it from a little bit of a different perspective because of that phrase throughout. But there's a whole lot of little things going on in here that I find really interesting. You know, I'm the ball in the machine. Watch me roll. Pinball. Pinball. You know, someone bouncing around, bouncing off the walls, bouncing off all the different things that are happening in life. And I think that's kind of well expressed because it takes you there, and I think it's intended to all the way through. But, you know, the only thing Nuno said down the bottom was, for those who call me a surrealist. And he says it's about death. So, you know, I'm not sure, you know, if this is something that someone finds as, I don't know how to word what I want to say.
Let me help you, dear. Let me help you.
I thought you were going to be absent. Just kidding.
I lied.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Feel free. Feel free to help me.
To me, this poem is kind of about nothing changing despite anything that, you might want. The banging on the walls, walking the dog, you know, little things that you could do that aren't going to change anything. No matter what it is in life that comes in briefly, cars will continuously ignore it and crash. I mean, that's a symbol for doing something over and over again the wrong way, not paying attention, or that life is not going to change no matter how ridiculous it is, even if you think it should change. And if you don't believe me, okay, fine. If you think I'm drunk, if you think I'm off my pills, whatever else, shove me into the tub, make me sober if you want to try. But I'll tell you what, the dogs are barking after the cars, and they're writing poems. They're telling me they're frustrated by those cars as well. They're serenading him back. I think Billy Boy is a character that we invent to talk to, you know, so that we're not talking to the reader. We're talking actually to somebody else who isn't there, but who we think is there, and that'd be Billy Boy. And he's telling Billy Boy, no matter how crazy the moment, I can come up with some shit, despite the fact that I have no control over my life, because the ball in the machine, the pinball, has no control over its life at all. It doesn't matter how much you feed the coins in to give me the chance to keep going. Well, it ain't going to work. I have a new tune. Might get me out of all this crap, but I'm not going to tell it to you because you might want to take it yourself. It's that good. Of course, I don't think that new song exists, or if it does, it's not what he wants to change his life. Of course, the fridge has the beer, and I don't know whether the layers in heaven are the number of beers one can drink or the different things to drink. That's right. My understanding kind of peters out a little bit towards the end, but I guess it makes sense in context of everything else that went on before it. And I like a number of the things that you said about it, Gene, because it is a piece that is open to interpretation. But, you know, that's what I saw in it here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I appreciate it. It's really hard for me to actually, you know, come up with it. But like I said, you know, I just see someone that's off their meds, bouncing off the walls, dealing with the things that life throws at them in a fashion, more of a manic fashion, because they're not medicated. That's what I was getting, like that manic kind of bouncing around kind of feeling throughout. And, you know, I could be totally wrong. Sure wouldn't be the first time. But it just really, I thought it was a great piece in the respect that it kind of took me there. You know, and I have to say, intentional or not, that's what it did. And, you know, as we say, poetry, we... oh God, I lost my whole train of thought on that. Jeez. See?
Well, look, I'll get you off the dime. We appreciate the crap out of this poem. It was great. Time to move on to the next one.
Listen to him. He just wants to have time for that monologue. Don't let him fool you. Absolutely.
Yeah. My name is Boo sometimes.
I don't know. I think my written comment was better than my verbal one, so that's a good thing. Nuno might not hate me when he is done reading.
Right.
Oh, what did I just do there? Okay.
Yeah, you see, Nuno is telling us in the room that we have different pieces of his puzzle.
Hi, Nuno.
So it's taken the two of us to kind of put it together. Hey, Hope. Yeah. Pleasure to see you, my dear.
Hello, hello, hello. Good to see you. Well, we have different pieces of his puzzle. Well, maybe if we put our heads together, we'd have it straight. That could be the answer. There you go. Let's see.
Like
okay.
Superman, we save the day and then we move out.
I hope. Okay. Yeah. The next piece I'm going to put up is called 2 Feet of Water by Allison Hodges. And I'm going to give, I'm going to try and give this one a read. Okay, let's see. 2 feet of water. 15 minutes of rain, $50,000. Yesterday's this and that scattered through the mud. The clothes on the fence as Chris hosed them down. Pictures, laundry, clipped to string while the drying fans drone on. Stripped to her baseboards, the house was exposed, vulnerable. broken doors tossed aside for a newer, cheaper model. 15 minutes of downpour, 2 feet of water, 9 months and 50,000 later, all new things. But I'd rather have the old things. End poem. Oof. Yeah. Well,
wow.
Laurent.
That was a great read. I think you recognized where that was going quickly. You gave the proper emphasis to that last line. I'd rather have the old things. When things are torn from us, suddenly, unexpectedly, yeah, they can be replaced. They don't have the emotional context, the emotional attachments that the old stuff does. Because the new stuff is still too new to have any emotional importance. That will come with time. The floods that are everywhere, the rains that are everywhere in the world today, where some places are getting 9 months, 6 months, 9 months of rain in a 15 or 20 minute period. What happened recently in Turkey and in, one of the Arabian countries, I forget which one, a massive flooding, unprecedented flooding near the United States as well. If you live near a river or a large creek and are in the wrong place, or the Midwest, the Central Plains, as some of the spaces, the Southeast have just become buckets of water over and over again. And this 15 minutes of rain, $50,000 yesterday, this and that, scattered through the mud. We've all seen the pictures, the devastations that floods and fire and tornadoes and hurricanes can leave. Absolute devastation where everything that you recognize is torn to its composite parts. And, you know, you save what you can. Clothes on the fence, laundry clips string, left for the household, it's exposed and vulnerable. That's a nasty feeling. Our castle doesn't have doors. It needs complete rebuilding. 15 minutes of downpour, 2 feet of water, 9 months at 50,000 liters. A new thing. That's deeply felt.
I have to say, you know, this is, yeah, it's sad to lose things we hold dear. And, you know, it sounds silly to say things we hold dear, you know, a door or whatever. But, you know, it's familiarity. You know, you become comfortable in what you have. And you have a certain place, you know, it's yours, you know. And, you know, things we gather or appreciate. And to suddenly lose it to flood or any disaster, you know, sure, we can replace it, but it doesn't hold that same sentiment. You know, you don't have that same sense of security because it is the way it was. And you don't have, and other things, you know, are more sentimental, but things you don't have that because, you know, usually we gather things as we go through life and those things mean something because of where we got them, how we got them, who was with us when we got them. And some people say, oh, you know, that's silly. It's just things, you know, but, you know, yeah, but there are things, you know, and there are parts and pieces. And I think that this was well done by Allison all the way around. You know, and I feel funny. I don't think I said her name. This is 2 Feet of Water by Allison Hodges. I want to make sure I definitely give her credit. I don't remember saying that in the beginning. So shame on me, but wonderful job, Allison. And yeah, it's, it was well put together.
I think you said her name at the beginning.
I may have, I just remembered doing that. So I don't like to take a chance. Yeah,
you covered your bases. That's what a pro does. Covered her bases. Sliding in feet first. Hook slide. Cover your base.
Gotcha. Let me see now. The next piece I'm going to put up is, I'm going to have you read it, and this is by Scott Sharp. So, oh no, that's the wrong page. Here we go again. Here we go. Okay. No More by S. Sharp. So whenever you're ready, Laurent.
Yeah. Excuse me. no more. Sunshine tastes like dandelion skin. Rainfall waits for the end to begin. Clouds carry burdens, scraping mountaintops. The moon drips like a faucet nonstop. Drip, dribble, dribble, drop. Hip, hibble, hibble, hop. Westward winds bend urgency. Mighty oaks bend at the knees. Ancient dirt stirs and rises up. Mercury rising just over the bluff. Spin, spizzle, spizzle, chuff. Hip, hibble, hibble. Hip, hibble, hibble. Jupiter, angry, turns the other cheek. Mars, red-faced and meek, follows whispering comet tails. Broken stars hammered like nails. Wick, whack, whack, wick. Wick, whack, whack, whale. Scream, scribble, scribble, sail. Scream, scribble, scribble, sail. Sea breezes swallow time. Free at last, like rhythm and rhyme. Water breaks and rolls ashore. Hungry, hungry carnivore. Slip, frizzle, frizzle for. Misty, mizzle, mizzle more. Misty, mizzle, mizzle no more. End poem. Mizzle, mizzle.
Nice read, Laurent. I have to say, I'm sorry, Scott. I did not know that there was a SoundCloud for this. It was kind of fun.
Okay. Listen to it later. We should listen to it later. Leave a comment. Leave a like. If your like button is broken, fix it and leave.
Well, listen to him.
Like buttons around here, my dear. Testing.
Oh, I don't know. All I do is look at things and it says I like them. I thought it was kind of a fun piece in some ways. You know, it gives you a couple lines of meaning in each stanza and then gives you the that tickle in the ear with the fun wordplay. Hang on a second. I got to hit the right button because what the hell is this thing doing? My computer wants to be creative without me. Okay.
You hit the wrong button, in other words.
No, I hit a, well, maybe.
No, you and technology are at odds.
Well, sometimes. Look, I've gotten where I come with no guidance whatsoever. I have learned everything I do on the computer the hard way, all by myself. So I don't think I do too bad with technology. But we do have our moments, me and these buttons.
Sometimes
anyway,
the dog gets off leash. That's all.
Yeah. I like this piece by Scott. You know, like the first stanza, sunshine tastes like dandelion skin. Rainfall waits to the end to begin, or for the end to begin. Clouds carry burdens, scraping mountaintops. The moon drips like a faucet nonstop. Wonderful imagery in that. And, I like it. Like, what does dandelion skin taste like? You know, but sunshine tastes like it. It's a neat direction to lead the reader. You know, the moon drips like a faucet nonstop. Drip, dribble, dribble, drop. Hip, hibble, hibble, hop. Just, I don't know. I love the way he ended each stanza with the sounds, because I think that it was, like I say, it was an element of like tickling the ear. I probably would have tripped over it all. I had to read the whole piece, so more power to you. Westward winds bend urgency. Mighty oaks bend at the knees. Ancient dirt stirs and rises up. Mercury rising just over the bluff. You know, I don't know. I love his descriptions in this. You know, westward winds. You know, oaks bend. They bend. They do. They're strong trees. And they hang in there. Takes a lot to get rid of them, to knock them down. But the ancient dirt stirs and rises up. Definitely a storm of sorts. You know, and Jupiter angry turns the other cheek. Mars red-faced and meek. Apollo's whispering comet tails, broken stars hammered like nails. I don't know. I really like it. I do. I'm trying to, I like the imagery in it. And I like where it makes your mind wander in each one of the stanzas. It's not simple or direct or straightforward or, you know, anything to that effect. But it's definitely nature and weather and you know, so you get the visuals that go with it. And, yeah, it's a clever piece. So, Scott, I got to say thanks for sharing with us. And I really liked it. I did. I really liked it. And, Laurent, it brings me to you.
Well, yeah, if you look into the categories that he has down below, and it's and he only lists one, and that's rhyme. And if you look at the four stanzas, each stanza is basically independent of any other stanza because they deal with entirely different things, yet they're connected by the rhyme. In the first stanza, we have rainfall, basically. Rainfall waits for the end to begin, clouds carrying burdens, scraping mountaintops, the moon drips like a faucet nonstop. In the second stanza, we have wind, and it is associated with the first by the kind of rhyme it has. In the third stanza, we have the complete opposites of Jupiter and Mars. Jupiter and Mars together, among other things, are an astrological sign combined. They're a song, I think, or they figure in a song, perhaps in the musical Hair, I'm not sure. But they are the exact opposites. But the interesting thing is that the combination of the two created an intense, passionate, and successful relationship. There's a strong karmic relationship between Mars and Jupiter, and I think that's why you see that in there, because we have something a little different from the first two. Now he's gone to opposites, one could say emotional opposites, human opposites, or universal opposites, again, connected by the rhyme. The last is the sea. With its rhythm and rhyme, the water breaks and rolls ashore, and then we move right into a hungry, hungry carnivore, which I think is a play on words, an hungry, hungry hippo, perhaps. But it's there for the rhyme. Once again, we have the rhyme connected to all the other four stanzas. So that's the way I see that.
Right, right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Just so you know, I did.
You sound very far away.
I shouldn't have. I'm still in the same spot. No, I was finishing typing the comment, and I did upload that audio just in case we have time at the end, because it's always good to hear Scott read his own stuff. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Stellina, and we have an audio for this one. And now all I have to do is find where I'm going. It's here somewhere. Here we go. This is called Just a Job by Stellina. So here we go.
Whoa.
Just a job, I tell myself. I'm only 25 and exactly on the shelf. The only thing I got is my body to sell, and my mom says I'm going straight to hell. But in just one night, I can make more dough than she makes in a month. With just one show for those greasy guys who think they're so cool, fumbling in the pockets, creepy dudes drool. They leer up at me, think they got a chance, but my body's my own and all I do is dance. They can look but not touch as I give them a show, putting money in my stockings as I crouch down low. See them down in the corner sniffing cane. I'm riding on my pole, driving them insane as I twist and twirl. shimmy and shake. Their palms getting sweaty and their bodies quake. They don't give my pretty face a second glance. Hypnotized by my curves in the sultry dance. I set them on fire, I'm their sweet fantasy. In their wildest dreams they'd never get a girl like me. They think they're all GD cause they're wearing Armani. But inside those suits they're just cheap and smarmy. They think they got the upper hand getting their thrills. But I have the last laugh cause they're paying my bills. Chase's work in the back rooms clapping, getting extra tips from old geezers slapping. Can double your money if you go back there. Those girls have passed the point where they just don't care. That's a line I won't cross, but got some pride. Not about to sell it to some seedy ride. It's a means to an end, the guys are all willing. Throw away cash and see my flesh spilling from my tiny costume of rhinestones and sequins. At the end of the night I know who wins. There's always one who tries to get a date, but I just tell them, honey, for you it's too late. Now I blow them a kiss as I get down from the stage, winking at the other dancer passes her cage. One day I'm gonna ditch this bumblefuck town. If I don't do it soon, I know I'm gonna drown. I've nothing to hold me, my mom's lost hope. Living for the bottle, she just can't cope. There's no one here who cares what happens to me. I can go any place like a bird, I'm free. When I've danced my last pole, I'll go out of that door. Won't ever look back from life, I want more. Want a good job, some kids and a house. A guy who loves me, not some two-bit louse. Sit in bed and count tips with a smile. My dreams will come true in a very short while. Grabbing any greyhound to take me far from here. Leave the sorry town without shedding a tear. Go where no one knows me, start over again. Think I've seen enough of pathetic loser men. I know there are decent guys out there. They're just waiting for someone to really care. I lock the front door and toss away the keys. From now on it's only me I'll please. So I'm off to find me a sweet loving guy, and I'll wave Sin City a cool bye-bye.
Nice. Great job, Stelena. Great audio. Great write. And Laurent, you want to start us off?
Sure. Well, there are a lot of people probably find themselves in the position of Stelena's character, which she did a really good job on the read. The production values are outstanding. Voices were in the background a little loud for my taste. I think that they're a little more subdued. Been a little better, but that's a minor point. The writing is very convincing. She's got the vernacular down. She gives a good list of words in the AN that she uses. And as usual, her flow, the rhythm, the beat, the way she read it, it all has that that vibe that I think she was looking for. I set them on fire on their sweet fantasy. In their wildest dreams, they'd never get a girl like me. They think they're all jiggy because they're wearing Armani. But inside those suits, they're just cheap and smarmy. She's got the voice for this kind of thing. Not just the physical voice, but the poetic voice. She's grabbed the tone perfectly by the scruff of the neck, and she's working it hard. If it means to an end, the guys are oh so willing to throw away cash, my flesh spilling from my tiny costumes of rhinestones and secrets. Nicely done, Selena, as usual. You know, I was going to start to say at the beginning, this is a story of people in a bad place trying to get somewhere better, of enduring something unpleasant in order to get to a better end. For many people, it's a broken dream. But I believe this girl has the moxie. She's got what it takes.
Right, right. Yeah, I think this was a really well done piece. I think she captured the story well. And Stelena does have something about her voice. When she gets into a write like this, anything with a little bit of sensuality, she pulls it off very well with her reads. Her audios are always stellar, you know. Not that this piece was sensual, but I think that it did have that note in the background because, you know, as a dancer, that's what you would expect, I guess. And I think that she did a fine job with it. So excellent job, Selena, and thanks for sharing with us. I appreciate that very, very much. Mm-hmm. So let me see. Where am I going now?
You want to pinch me.
You want me to pinch you? Save that for later.
Why is that lying? I said you were lying.
No, I wasn't. I was not. I was behaving.
Okay.
I
ain't misbehaving.
That's right. What? I'm behaving myself. Then, you know what? I'm going to put up Frank's piece next and have you read that. Because that seems like the right place to go. Okay. I'm putting up... Oh, Hope Soul. She remembers first time she read that poem by Stelena. It's so creative to come up with such a story, beats, and create all the production and give the reader a full entertaining experience. Amen, Hope. Stelena, that's one thing she does. She can definitely set the stage and work it all the way through in all of her work. And she writes a wonderful piece. She puts a wonderful production together. And, you know, we get a full-rounded experience when we listen to her things. So you're absolutely correct there. Okay, Laurent, here we go. Return of the Raven by Poetic Picasso. Nice.
Return of the Raven. Once upon a midnight dull and dim, while I wandered weary and grim, o'er the tales of a poet lingering in the darkness of those days of yore, while I was lightly napping, I heard the particular flapping and a tapping, as if a gentle guest was rapping slowly at my chamber door. I felt the sudden visitor methought, tapping there at my chamber door. Only this, nothing. Opened wide, swung the shutters, swaying the burr of uncertain flutters, when a howling wind of thrust had bustled with the ominous hour of war. Intrigued, I sought the sound unbroken. Eagerly, I thought, was this a token? With the fluster that was unspoken, behind those hollow walls of lost gold. As I had opened the door to the ambages of hollow walls of lost lore, darkness there, and nothing more. A thrilling noise of a stranger, preternatural of an imminent danger, nigh a narrow corridor of threat and scare that shook my feet upon the floor. And this nightly scent of a censer stirred the echoes becoming denser, as the cause made me tenser from a swarthy bird whose stare I deplore. 'Tis the most horrible sound of a swarthy bird who shall ever deplore, nameless here, Ian Moore. Flapping wings of might and main, I felt by the creak and strain, and the accursed doors had bidden the fright that I dreaded more. Poe in the corridor with his unease, bearing his wretched surcease, the sorrow laden of his decease, hope and pray to see no more. Alas, sorrow laden I remember, as I hope then to see no more, is my imagination, thought, and nothing more. The glimpse of a wayworn man, wandering his strolling lawn, with his shabby pantaloons worn and his mien for evermore, painted with his bombazine coat, that no poor gent can gloat of the horrors that denote this unsightly bathos heretofore. That sempiternal gleam of this unsightly bathos heretofore, a wraith and nothing more. He tarried for so long to utter, although he yearned to mutter, in the Stygian days of that hopeless abyss, the word Lenore. The distant damp dew of his graveyard, with the selected few, whence his brittle bones stew, rotting away with just uproar. As his queer voice I hear, from the epitaph of his uproar, is the wind, perhaps, and nothing more. In my chamber entered the lone raven, no flit or flutter of a craven. The quaint intruder who was tapping at my chamber door before, staring with the ebony guise, his scarlet eyes of dark disguise, perched as a stately prize on a busted palace above my door, perched so honorably upon a busted palace above my door, perched there. And nothing more. Nevermore, this ungainly bird spoke, that had willed and stirred the dormant souls tenfold of the Ophelian tenants who implore, and cursing me with the devilish ire, escaped from the brimstone dire, with the burning embers of fire, in a hall of oblivion to ignore, too barren and too unnoticeable. Is this ghastly oblivion to ignore a madness and nothing more? Raven, though a prophet or demon, an omen or a beacon, henceforth art thou forever, subliminary legend of folklore? Dost thou beguile me with the words of prophecy I must see? Or must I soon believe thee and his tristful truth, wherefore? The exalted immortals redeem is still truth, wherefore of the raven nevermore. Haunting with a riddle of sorrow from night unto the morrow, that failed to sing his dirge and give him no condign encore, unto the lofty halls, halls of Elysium, and rid him of his cruel delirium, and bestowed upon him the equilibrium of revered bands galore. I sensed his valediction resplendent of never bards galore, the raven's wings ruffled as he forbore. Bind, tell me of his dirge. Hath it been sung yet, I urge, by those divine angels of death who mourn the days of yore? The genuine glory of his wrought quill, the braided stances of thrill, hark, the pain of the loyal will of his silver peers forevermore. Forsooth, the pain of sublimity of his silver peers forevermore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. For the raven, ere unbreakable, spoke with a memory so impeccable, as if that mere duplicitous word had haunted with a malfaction before, spreading his long wings indiscreetly, and flying to my draperies fluently, to warn me of that vicissitude discreetly that befell upon me evermore, brought the phantom of vicissitude that befell me evermore, a whim of death, I breathe you more. Of all thee, the temper from Lethe, and that quaff of Nepeth, empty. And that joyous coming of the morrow shall then liberate therefore the Lauren Cenotaph was insidious solitude and the drear incertitude, as a door of magnitude shall open, the fane at end of Lenore, the chamber door leading a spirit, the fane at end of Lenore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Drown in a shade of foe's gloom, tormenting me with harsh doom. Within the ceaseless dread of this horrid phantasmagoria I abhor, would I see a following night of mirth, and feast again in this earth, or would I fade away in a dearth of a treacherous night that o'erbore? I betook myself to a resignation, of a tenebrious night that o'erbore, was the echo of ne'ermore. Art thou a saintly raven, or art thou a reaper of this maiden? Tell me, please, I must know, for I heed the curiosity to explore, the marvelous mystery that intrigues me to know this history of a bar medical discovery, spiteful naysayers denied as lore. Is this an imaginative myth, spiteful naysayers denied as lore? Quoth the raven, nevermore, nevermore. The raven of no soot or grime did not flinch with a chime of this church bell's foreboding, the pain that shall restore, the magnanimous vestige that shall uplift upon his refulgent visage, languishing in a grievous presage amidst the seraphim ashore. For I was told of his grievous lament amidst the seraphim ashore, what was meant by its croak nevermore. Herald, tempter of the raven, or guardian of this eerie haven, I sincerely query, is it true, amongst the doubters he forswore? Is there balm in Gilead found, beneath the Pallades that abound? Shall his voice triumph to redound through the ripples of time before? Is there respite for me through the ripples of time herefore? Quoth the raven, nevermore. He quitted before the early daylight, as he stood firm and upright, while a broom had yielded afterwards unto the edge of a seashore, into the broad tempest of the foe, disappeared the silhouette of Poe, and the raven flew in the peculiar award beyond the Teutonian shore. Verily, his sable pinions had flown beyond the Teutonian shore. The raven's image shall be seen nevermore, nevermore, of the said nevermore, end poem. Get you through this payback to me. I knew when I left the house, I don't hear anything. That's why I'm still up. Maybe somebody over there.
We can still hear you.
I'm going to get you for this one.
I had no idea that poem was that long.
Not the slightest indication of what I was about to embark on. I would have.
I had no idea.
Better.
I had no idea. Frank has failed the 3-minute limit. He failed it miserably tonight. That was a huge poem, and I had no clue that it was going to be like that. And as you started reading, I'm going, okay. And I scrolled down, and I went, And I scrolled again, and I went, And I scrolled again, and I went, geez. So I apologize for the extreme.
At a certain point, you evil, evil woman, I heard you snigger.
I did not.
Stances. You must have just scrolled down, seen that there was even more. Now, having said all this, I am in deep admiration of this piece. Good Lord. Good Lord, the skill it took to throw this thing together. And this was written 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would have taken a younger man to write this. I'm telling you right now. He's so well-grounded in his language and in the legends and in poetry in general. I mean, I'm not going to repeat or quote any part of this because I don't think I have the energy or the strength at this point. But, oh, my God, what a piece. I mean, it quite frankly, in terms of language, it exceeds Poe. in certain places because the meanderings of Frank's mind and his stanzas sometimes create a complexity that is bewildering, yet it doesn't really stop the flow of the poem at all. What a masterwork.
Absolutely. Just, you know, Hope Soul says, applause. Wow, someone give this man flowers. So, see, she likes your read.
she's so nice. Thank you,
I
Hope.
Had no
I
idea.
That.
But it was a wonderful piece. It really was. But I was shocked. I did. I scrolled down some more. I think I was on mute the whole time you were reading, though. I tried
no,
to.
No, so I heard something at some point. Don't give me.
Well, I was the only one here, so it must have been I.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I know I have your piece left to go. I have a recording by Pam, and I have a piece by Hope Soul. I'm going to read Hope Soul. By the way, Frank, I left your written comment. And then I'm going to play Pam's piece. I'm going to give you a break so you can read your piece, okay? I don't want to.
Oh, yeah, I got to follow all that. Bravo. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, keeps you on your toes. This piece by Hope Soul is called End of Lunch and Quick Daydream. The taste of juicy green grapes mixed with strawberries have been washed away with a wave of bitter coffee, even with vanilla infused. Still, I smack the essence of grounds and ginseng, which linger on the taste buds. Fingering through long, dark hair under the fluorescent lights, those flyaway grays remind me I'm where I should be. A tiny black metal clasp holds two pieces of fabric together, their job, keep the girls hidden at all costs. Lavender blue dress with a hem that's just above the knee. Can't look too professional, so I wear a pair of low-rise steel-toe black Doc Martens, reminding myself I'm a 90s baby with a side of punk, leaning in closer to the mirror. Cat-eye frame glasses need adjustments. Have to reapply pink lip gloss. Rose kiss all day is what the label reads. The floral scent drapes the petals and blossoms you to me. That smile of yours, our mouths softly pushing against one another's. How your mustache felt on my skin. Buzz, buzz, buzz. Lunch hour is up. Papers won't fax themselves. Pulling my head down from the clouds. End poem. Neat. Nice piece, Hope. Laurent, you want to comment on this one? Uh-oh. Don't make me pinch you. Oh, no. Ooh-hoo. Yoo-hoo. Oh, no. Well, Hope, I think this is a wonderful piece. I did. I love how you...
Oh, wait a second.
No. Look.
Did you read the room?
No, I was reading a poem.
You should have read the room. Read the damn room.
No.
I don't want to ignore Hope's piece. Come on. I would never do that. I've been here all evening. Let me just find it. Well, where the hell did you poke? I can't find the piece.
I hope I think you did a wonderful piece here. Laurent, you're on your own to find the piece. Let me make my comment while you're doing that. Jeez Louise. You're focused. I love how you incorporated that break time where you had a few minutes to stop and just kind of reminisce over, that moment in time. I think that it was very believable, very real. You know, you talk about, you know, what you wore, the coffee, just the fruit. You know, and you lead us right into that little daydream at the end, and I think it was really well done. Leaning in closer to the mirror, you know, you talk about your glasses and lip gloss. And I think that it sounded very natural, very real. Whether it is or is not, I don't know. But you made it real. And that's what I liked about the piece very much. So, excellent job there. Laurent. Would you like to comment on this piece?
I most certainly would love to. You know, when you take the taste of juicy green grapes mixed with strawberries. It's a real waste of it washed away with coffee. I love the taste of strawberries and grapes together. Fingering through long dark hair and the fluorescent lights, those flyaway grays remind me of where I should be. The acceptance there doesn't have to be young, doesn't have to be super muscular or anything, but long dark hair, flyaway grays. I like the way she deals with her dress, the two pieces of fabric that keep the girls hidden at all costs. I think that's attractive. And to have the intimate ending of the smile of yours, our mouths softly pushing against one another, and then the very tactile sensation of a mustache felt on skin. It's a quick lunch hour. They have to get back to work, and she has to pull her hands out of the cloud, her head out of the clouds, where it's been that delightful hour. We used to spend lunch hours like that when I worked in a big city, especially. Everybody wanted to get to the latest coffee bar, sit down and have a lunch, snooze, talk. Like you said, Gene, this is a very real poem, real circumstances, very filthily written. Nice line, nice phrase, in other words.
Absolutely. Great comment, Laurent. Okay, I'm going to put Pam's piece up. And we're going to do, unless you want to do yours now. I figured I'd give your voice a break.
I'm going to do whatever you want me to do. I'm not going to say yes or no.
Okay. Y'all got that, right? Y'all heard him say that. It's whatever I want him to do. Here we go. This is called Two Men by Pam Ray. And it's, I have an audio for it.
Two men walking down the street to a morality meet and greet. One man has a conscience clear. The other doesn't really care what people say or do or think while he lives life upon the brink. Both have such a glorious grin, with no thought to sordid sin. One tells the truth, the other lies, both like a gal with shapely thighs. They point their fingers at each other. The game of blame is such a bother, for oft a conscience can't be viewed through religious cud that can't be chewed. End poem.
Wow. Pam, even when she's concise, pulls it all together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's if we haven't learned by this time to grant the other fellow his own beliefs and his own style and trust in the happiness that it brings him, instead of trying to hunker, bring them over to the other side, change their method, their way of thinking. I mean, there has to be common beliefs that allow that kind of thing to happen. Well, some of which we don't see anymore today. But that's a lot of the problem we have today with religion. The religious code that can't be chewed. They can't ever swallow the damn stuff. They just keep trying to chew it over and over again, but it resists. It's like rubber. It keeps, stays right where it is. Ugly sealant. That is great, great piece.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I thought it was a great piece and a great take on the prompt. There's only one way to achieve happiness on this terrestrial ball, and that is to have either a clear conscience or none at all. And I think she really expressed it well. I mean, she did. She put the two together in each line, each sentence.
Well, look how skillfully she hewed to the prompt. That's exactly what the prompt does. Only one way to have happiness, but he mentions two things.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yep, I agree. I think she nailed the prompt very well. So great job, Pam, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. Appreciate it. And that brings me to Laurent.
Jesus. You know, I had hoped to sneak this one in under cover of darkness earlier on in the program, but it doesn't.
Well, it was a crazy night, you know. You know, there's a couple people in the room now. Maybe somebody will hear it. Right?
She says, I'm being silly. I am being silly. Try reading Frank's piece. Takes a lot out of you. Okay. Sorry about that. Sorry for being silly. My days start at 6. They seem to end at about 2 o'clock in the morning. It makes for a long day. Mother is home again. If all the bells on earth pealed in one voice, some in darkness, some in light, others in the twilight of in between, a note resonating to the heavens, piercing the muffled shroud of age, bringing old eyes and ears to attention. Salute, stand at ease, listen to these instructions. Forth tumbled the notes, a formula for remembrance. Music and its piety and triumph, soaring, falling, scouring memory clean. Drift of cobwebs and mold, bringing past life into focus. Recalling who you were, who you are, still from the dark miasma of dementia, issues of small light, keeping the beat in time with the music, with rhythms of life blown bold and brassy, atoms flow, coalescing into cells, into words, the seeds of self re-sown, and for a time, the bright flower blooms and shakes its stem in a two-step. And the daughter discovers her mother, home again, and her scarecrow imposter has fled the field. End poem.
It's a great write, Laurent. When I read it earlier, it really, there's so much to it. Because I think it's the wonders of music and how it's imprinted on us. You know, how it can stay with us so deeply throughout our lives. And even people that have dementia or other issues, as we had talked about a little bit, when they hear the music, it comes back to them. It just comes back to them. It can draw them back, you know, and I find that working in long-term care all of my life, I've seen different things, and I know that there's so much truth to this. When we used to have people come in and play music for the folks, you know, for activities, everybody would get involved. You know, you could just see it. They enjoyed it. They loved it. And I was telling you the story about the woman who had a stroke, and she could talk, but she couldn't start a sentence. She couldn't start a conversation. She couldn't make herself get the words out. But, you know, you put on music or you start to sing something, she would sing it. She could get started that way. And I always found that to be so intriguing, the way the mind and music work together. There's so much to that. And I think you did a fabulous job catching that. And, you know, your line there, the daughter discovers her mother is home again. Because all of a sudden, there she is. She recognizes it. She sees it. You know, she sees something she hasn't seen in a long while, or a while, or heaven knows how long. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of truth in that. And, you know, music's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So great job with this piece. I think it was a great capture. So thanks for sharing. Are you there, Mr. Laurent? Are you in the room again?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, okay.
We're doing fine. I didn't want to interrupt you.
I was finished my comment. It's okay. So.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And thank you all.
Yes. So we have 10 minutes left, and I have one poem left, so I guess I can do that, huh? So let's see.
You need something else, Steve?
I have one more piece left by
You promised
Jack
me that monologue, goddammit. Okay.
I know, but I got a piece from Jack Blue. So I have to
go
put
for
that
it.
In. So I have to put it up. Let's see what I have. It's called Luke's Blue Ballad by Jack Blue. When the cloud administrator dreams about uncanny storms, my small spiritual shadows, like uneasy nightingales or eccentric fireflies, fly around a nightmare. A great variety of ghosts and a great variety of ghosts of the identical donkey idly take off one by one from the underground to the empty gloomy blue where no smile tolls. In the silent wood of ash, the fresh old memories of my mad, bad comedy keep resounding bright when the mice of hell march on demon's luck. Should I call to heaven pensively about some joke in my worldly character, like a shady double donkey, braze away to drown out his horribly blue poetry? Through the finest night or the painted universe, a mellow melody, withering and waving, always sounds identically on the emotional clavier. In the dreamy moonlight, primordial silhouettes or kittens from the comet see a jazzy donkey off till the magical blue night brightens up the little star. End poem. Okay. Well, Laurent, would you like to comment on this first?
I would like you to go first.
Okay, I can do that. I think that when I read Jack Blue, I always kind of, it takes me somewhere else, you know, Luke's Blue Ballad. And he speaks of the donkey. Whenever he speaks of the donkey, for some reason, it always puts you in Midsummer Night's Dream mode. Not exactly sure if I'm there or I'm not, but that's where it takes me. And when the cloud administrator dreams about uncanny storms, my small spiritual shadows, like uneasy nightingales or eccentric fireflies, fly around the nightmare. And then it goes on to be, you know, a great variety of ghosts of the identical donkey. I get that image of the fireflies and donkey in, you know, the Midsummer's Night Dream. You know, I could be foolish or not. But this is a little, it's going to sound corny because I'm going to say this is a little bluer than what I'm used to seeing from Jack. He has the color in there, but it's more of a sadder, a somber piece. And usually his are a little lighthearted and give me something a little whimsical. This is not quite as whimsical. This is a more serious or sad piece. And I think that he did a nice job with it. It's just, it's so different. You know, through the finest night or the painted universe, a mellow melody, withering and waving, always sounds identically on the emotional clavier. Just really a nice piece, and I think that it has a lot wonderful imagery. His use of color is nice. You know, he's got the magical blue night brightened up the little star at the end. You know, his color is always nice. I just think that it's a little more of a serious note than usual. So, on that note, it was a great job, Jack, and thanks for, Luke, and thanks for sharing with us. I really appreciate it. And Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, he had translated this from a German poem that he had written, Blaue Balladia von Luca, as stated in the AN.
Yes.
I wish I knew German to read the original, but that's fine. It's really an examination of an individual in the darkest or bluest or gloomy atmosphere. My small spiritual shadows, like uneasy nightingales or eccentric fireflies, fly around the nightmare, which one presumes are, if not just his dreams, his days, his nights, his life is like a nightmare. And he, in the silent wood of ash, the fresh old memories of my mad, bad comedy keep resounding bright deep within the heartwood of his character. There is that which he cannot deny, which keeps haunting him. And, you know, he says that he's written this prosodically, you know, which is kind of lighthearted. And there is that little tinge, as you mentioned, of that in this. But languages, I think, is quite remarkable. The imagery, through the finest night of the painted universe, a mellow melody withering and waving. Isn't that delight? Great piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great piece. Absolutely. Hey, we got 5 minutes, Laurent.
All right. I'm going to rant simply by reading a poem which I read before. It's in the room. Called On to Our Dying. Midnight sleeps and creaks its groan, hinging dreams, no quarter shown. Slander, scandal, sex, and crime. Fact, not fiction, is a stitch in time. Wait a while, the play is absurd, scripted with song and spoken word. Facts reviled, a mad fool's fantasy, tempting with guile and lies, you see. With callous disregard, he murders truth. Devil on your shoulder in the voting booth. Hate, not love, writ with a silver spoon. God complex rules his madman's tune. Come, all ye faithful, it's time for the jury. Democracy is in danger. Marshal your fury. Love your neighbor is no idle jest. Hate is the knife buried in America's chest. Reckoning is nigh. See truth's light shining. But no man remove what we fought for and bled for unto our dying. End poem. That's my rant. Love it or I'll leave it.
Look, now that's your payment for all the abuse you put up with tonight. Yeah, it was a great piece, though. It really was. Excellent job.
You wore me out. You whipped me up that mountain trail like a donkey.
Yeah. You loved every minute of it.
Ha! I got no voice left.
You won't be arguing with me tonight, then. There. See? No, it was a great piece. I really thought it was well done, well expressed, and well stated. On top of that, so listen, everybody.
Exactly the kind of subject you don't want to expound on. You have become the Switzerland of poets.
Yeah.
No armed forces in these domains.
Mm-hmm. I have my opinion.
Neutral.
Myself. And we all know that, but, yes, but we have 90 seconds left, and everybody, if you're around, join Pam and, Faziana tonight for Part Sinner, Part Saint. I'm sure they'd be delighted to have you visit. And, great show tonight, Laurent. Thank you so much for sharing, your time with me and, putting up with all our craziness. And I want to thank everybody who shared poetry.
I'd like to think that I contributed to the craziness.
Contributed to the craziness. Well,
crazy is good radio. Come on now. Crazy is good radio.
This is true. I want to thank Hope and Nuno and Pam and Darkened Auras and Frank for stopping by. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. It was good to see you all. And, come back again next week. We'll have a few more laughs. Maybe I'll find another like epic poem for Laurent to read. Maybe he can read Beowulf or something.
Payback. Remember, there is payback involved. I've not forgotten.
So great show tonight, everybody. Thank you for sharing your poetry, your time. And Laurent, thanks for sharing your voice. Appreciate that. And everybody take care, and we will see you
I
soon.
Hope Rex gets better.
Yeah, me too. But, that's the way that happens. And you all be good.